Hello and welcome to my dental hygiene school experience. My name is Dax Ska, and each episode I'm going to share my own experience of dental hygiene school. The highs, the lows, the funny, and the real. Thank you for joining me on my journey, and here's another episode right now. What's up, dental nerds? This is Dax Ska here with another episode. I know it's been a minute, but I have some really good content for you today. I'm interviewing Dr. Katie Lee. She's a dentist, an author, public speaker, and she gets to be on a podcast. So that's pretty exciting. I talked to Dr. Katie about many different aspects, but mostly the connection between your oral health and the systemic health of your body. A lot of fascinating information. I hope you have a listen to it. This is probably the most informative episode I've had so far. So I hope you enjoy it. And here's Dr. Katie. Dr. Katie Lee, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. This is my first hygiene student podcast. So, really excited to chat and try and get some information out there to the next generation of hygienists.
Yes, definitely. Let's get a little introduction for you. You have quite a story. So do you want to share that with us?
Yeah, just kind of my intro into dentistry. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah,
sure. So when I was 14 years old, I was riding on a four-wheeler and did not have a helmet on. And I crashed face first going 35 miles an hour into a telephone pole.
Oh, wow.
I'm lucky to be alive, lucky that I'm not paralyzed, and also lucky that I still have some semblance of a working mind. You know, obviously with that crash, I lost a bunch of teeth. And I ended up fracturing every bone in my face from my eyebrows down. Oh, and I was in a coma for a few days and woke up and my jaws were completely wired shut. Now, of course, they wired the jaw shut with the teeth that were broken and missing because they just had to stabilize my situation as quickly as possible. And so over the next 8 weeks of having my jaws wired shut, you know, obviously oral hygiene was definitely the least of my concerns. And in order to eat, I had to have a liquefied diet. And so I survived on ice cream and Hershey syrup, boxed mashed potatoes, pudding and Jell-O, all the things that like we would tell our patients that you should never eat anyway. That's literally all I was eating. And, you know, I think it was for a couple of reasons. I think, you know, we didn't really know better about nutrition from where I came from back then. And then also, you know, I was in so much agony, right, that at that point it was just like, whatever we can do to make her happy, let's do.
Right.
And so that wreaked havoc on my mouth. And of course, I started developing dental pain and infections and cavities and things like that. But I also became emaciated, as you can imagine, not having any nutrition, and my liver enzymes spiked, my kidneys started shutting down. And so I learned at a very young age just how much your oral health affects your overall health. And then when they did take my wires off 8 weeks later, unfortunately, my jaw joint had fused completely shut. So I was so excited. In fact, I had planned a trip with my friends to go to Olive Garden. That was like going to be my first meal after leaving the doctor's office. And they clipped my wires. And I remember him saying, okay, open your mouth. And I tried to open and I couldn't. And that was devastating. And so it took 4 years and 9 reconstructive surgeries for me to be able to open my mouth. And also it wasn't until after I was able to open my mouth that I could then get my teeth fixed and then replace my missing teeth with dental implants. And so I had to go all through high school, which is our formative years, of being affected with this, you know, not only dental disease, but then also the emotional and mental toll that it takes on you, not being able to smile and communicate and just eat lunch, you know, in the cafeteria with your friends. So that's what got me into dentistry. But then that's also what, you know, really tipped the hat for me in terms of the mouth is connected to the rest of the body and so important for our overall health.
Yeah. Wow. That is quite a story. Like, I mean, we all go through stuff, but that is definitely impactful.
Yes. I was doing a podcast earlier this weekend. We were talking about, how this happens during your formative years of high school. And at the time going through it, I was just trying to survive. But now looking back, I'm thankful for the experience because it gave me such a passion for what I do now. And I'm grateful for the experience because I'm able to help so many other people and patients. But at the time, yeah, it was rough. I'm not gonna
Yeah,
say.
definitely. Well, and you did mention the connection between the mouth and the overall body. I know in hygiene school they definitely talk about that. It's definitely a real thing. Can you kind of explain more about that for those who haven't learned about it yet in school?
Sure. I'm really excited to hear that they're talking about it more and more in school because when I was in dental school, I was there in between 2006 and 2010. It definitely was not a thing. I remember graduating in 2010, and there was a study that came out that said, gum disease was associated with heart disease. But it was a very weak paper in terms of saying, how related they were. So we've really come a long way, and I'm really excited that the schools are talking about this. And so essentially, when we talk about oral systemic health, we're trying to put the mouth back into the body as a vital organ system. It was over 100 years ago that dentistry got plucked out, or the mouth got plucked out of the body and separated and siloed into its own medical entity. But it really is part of the whole body. It's the beginning phase of our digestive system. It's, the oral microbiome is what establishes and constantly feeds the gut microbiome, which people don't realize. It's responsible for bacteria getting into our bloodstream and for systemic immune response. And so essentially what the mouth-body connection is, or oral systemic health, is it just means that whatever is in the mouth doesn't stay in the mouth. Over time, our gum tissue, which is supposed to act as a barrier, just like our skin acts as a barrier and protector to our bodies, our gum tissues can start to break down, and the bacteria in the mouth will translocate through the gum tissue, enter the bloodstream, and then circulate and damage almost everything in the body. That's now been proven. And not only is it a bacterial issue, but it's also an inflammatory issue. And we know that the bacteria cause inflammation, but then we also know that they're a major component to the degree of inflammation is going to be the host immune response. So that's in a nutshell what it is.
So when you're looking in a patient's mouth, what are you looking for to see signs of the connection?
Yeah, so the main thing that we're looking for is, especially, for hygienists, is going to be signs of gum inflammation. Bleeding gums is never okay, despite what, they may or may not be teaching. Bleeding gums is not okay. That is a sign that there is some granulation tissue present, that there's some inflammation present, and that there's actually breakdown of collagen in the gum tissue. So when you're looking in a patient's mouth, if you see red or swollen gums, or if when you're doing your periodontal probing, you notice that the patient is bleeding, that is a sign that they have what's called leaky gums, which is, gingivitis or periodontal disease. It's also the same exact concept as leaky gut, which I know a lot of people have heard about. The other thing that I always look for is going to be abscesses. So, when we talk about oral systemic health, most people solely focus on gums, but we know that dental abscesses cause a whole host of issues. They're responsible for heart attacks and strokes, also responsible for making them more fatal. And then we know that the strep mutans bacteria, the one, the bacteria that's mainly responsible for causing cavities, that is implicated in 50% of endocarditis cases, which is heart infection. So it's always really important to look for cavities and abscesses. And then the last thing that I always check for, and I actually really encourage training hygienists to look for this because you guys are in the mouth oftentimes longer than we are, is to look for airway disorders or signs of airway disorder. So when you're looking in a patient's mouth and doing your cleanings, you have direct visibility to the size and shape of their airway. And if you can't completely see the back of someone's throat because their tongue is in the way or their tonsils are there, or maybe their uvula is there, that means that patient probably has an airway disorder or some sort of dysfunction of their airway. Other signs can include, you know, if you have a patient who is a mouth breather and maybe their teeth are really dry and sticky, you know, their anterior teeth are covered in plaque and their gums are really inflamed. Those are all signs of mouth breathing. And we know that mouth breathing has very detrimental effects on the oral microbiome and the gut microbiome, as well as brain health. Brain health and heart health are big with breathing as well.
And it's interesting that you actually mention airway health, because something I learned about in my head and neck anatomy class was something called myofunctional therapy. And so kind of relating to the same thing. And I just think that's absolutely fascinating, because this is, again, something is not talked about very often in the dental world. And so they're trying to make it more prevalent, because there's a lot of value in correcting those disorders.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes me so happy that you guys are learning about this stuff, because I really feel like, you know, the oral systemic health, and I've said this for years, a big piece of us as a profession really getting into the oral systemic health space and having not only patients take it seriously, but the medical profession take it seriously, is going to be to train the hygienist. Because like I said, you guys are in the mouth longer than we are most times, and you have direct visibility to the airway. So you could go ahead and do your airway screening there. And then also, you know, you guys are the ones that are the first line defense for any kind of gum inflammation. And so I really have always preached that oral systemic health belongs with, not belongs with, but, you know, the pioneers for treating this is going to be the dental hygienist. So that makes me really happy they're talking about that.
Awesome. So now, again, we're talking to dental hygiene students. And so when we see patients, what kind of advice can we give them to help improve the connection between the oral health and the health of the body?
I mean, I think the first thing that I would always start with, because I think patients have very limited knowledge of oral systemic health, which is why I ended up writing and publishing a book that came out in September called Saved by the Mouth. And it's a book all about oral systemic health. And I wrote it for patients. That was my audience, because I found myself constantly saying the same thing to patients over and over again. But it also is scientific enough and research based that it's a really good intro for clinicians, hygienists, and dentists to read it as an intro into oral systemic health, so that they can start to pick up some of the language to use with patients. And I think the first thing to start with is to always ask your patient, are you aware that the health of your mouth affects the health of your body? I mean, I would start with that, because it's important to get a baseline understanding of where your patient's at. Because if they have absolutely zero idea that the mouth is connected to the rest of the body, if you start going into, you know, heart disease and Alzheimer's and pancreatic cancer and colon cancer and arthritis and all this other stuff, they're going to look at you like, who the heck is this person? Let, you know, and they'll even say, I'm going to talk to my doctor about this. Like, you're just my hygienist, right? Or you're just my dentist. Mm-hmm. So I always will ask the question, are you aware that the health of your mouth affects the health of your body? And then from there, if they say yes or no, you can start to educate the patient. And that starts with taking a really thorough medical history. So after the patient says yes or no, I'll say, well, what's really important is that we go through your medical history in detail, so we can see what diseases you currently have and what you're at risk for in the future based off of what I notice or find in your mouth. Another really important thing is to always get an immediate family history as well, because a lot of diseases, you know, don't just show up overnight. They can take 10 years of having disease in the body before actually being meeting the threshold for a diagnosis. For example, diabetes type 2. Most people have metabolic syndrome or insulin resistance for about 10 years before they meet the threshold of having diabetes type 2. So if you can get a family history, and, you know, maybe they'll say, oh, my dad or my mom or someone, my brother has diabetes, then we know that they're going to be at an increased risk of having diabetes type 2. So get a really good medical history for your patient. also get a really good medical history for their family. And then I would also ask about, you know, lifestyle habits and nutrition. We know that the two biggest modifiers for disease risk or disease mitigation is nutrition and exercise. And so just asking those two questions, you know, tell me what you eat in a day, or tell me what you don't eat in a day. And then how much do you exercise? And then I always like to ask, you know, tell me about your sleep, because everyone's going to tell you they're tired and they don't sleep enough. But then you can start asking some more questions. And then based off of that information, you can slowly start to say, well, did you know that your oral health is tied to heart health? And I see that you have, you've already been diagnosed with high blood pressure. I also see that you're on a statin medication. So we need to do a really thorough gum exam, because we know that the bacteria in your mouth, if you have certain strains, will damage your heart. So this is going to be really important that we look for this. And so just tying in the oral health to whatever is on their medical history is going to be vital to getting their buy-in for the concept of oral systemic health.
Yeah. And I remember in school, they were talking about how a lot of people are fairly good about seeing their dentist, but they almost never go to their doctor. And so that puts more, I don't want to say responsibility, but in a way, yes, of doing a thorough health exam, because that way we'll catch things. I know, like, one time when I was working in a clinic, we had done a pano on the patient, and the doctor noticed that one of their arteries was quite clogged from the x-ray.
Yeah.
And she said, you need to go to your doctor like today. Like, this is very serious. Because obviously he wasn't going to the dentist very much, but on this one occasion that he did, this is something that probably could have saved his life.
And I'm sure it did, because yeah, you're right, on the panos, we can see the carotid arteries. And if they're calcified, it's going to show, well, we can't see the carotid arteries on a pano, but you can see if there's calcifications in the area of the carotid arteries. And if there are, we know that that's been a really long standing disease process, because what happens is first we get fatty streaks in the blood vessels. And then over time, the body starts to wall them off or calcify them to kind of stabilize them and keep them from causing more damage. But the more calcifications build up, the more the vessel gets occluded. And then you can have ischemic events that will happen, like, you know, a stroke or something like that in the brain. And so for someone to be able to pick up a complete calcification like that on a pano of a patient, I mean, that disease process has been happening so long. So you're right in that. Many patients, especially now, access to care in this country is so challenging for primary care that most people go see their dentist way more often than they see their physician. And so I think we have such a unique opportunity in dentistry to be pioneers in getting patients healthier. And I'm really excited about that opportunity. And I'm trying to get the word out there for people to kind of rise to the occasion and take advantage of this, because we're often the first people that will detect high blood pressure on patients. You know, we're the first ones that oftentimes will say, hey, you know, looking in your mouth, it looks like you probably have diabetes. Let's do a blood glucose test. And there's other testing modalities coming out on the market that dentists are going to be able to do to help initially screen their patients. So you're absolutely right about that.
Now, for the patient that, you know, they have pretty good oral health, they brush, they floss, what else would you recommend for them to improve their oral health, or at least maintain the healthy mouth that they have?
Great question, because prevention is key. You know, in this country and in the world, I think most of medicine is treatment of disease instead of prevention of disease. And the first thing that I tell every patient when they come in is that we must do some biomarker testing. So I make every patient, not make, I strongly encourage every patient to get a microbiome saliva test. Because I want to know what pathogens are in their mouth, because even though they may appear healthy, that doesn't mean that the biology is healthy. It could just mean that the biology has shifted, but we're not seeing clinical signs yet. And that's where we really want to catch our patients. We want to catch them in that step, because we can very easily intervene, change their microbiome, and prevent disease, which is our job. And so I strongly encourage microbiome tests. I also strongly encourage something called an MMPA test, which is becoming more widely available. What that test is it's a systemic biomarker that tells us to the level of collagen breakdown that's happening not only in the mouth, but in the body. So this is what's responsible for leaky gut. It's also what's responsible for breaking down of gum tissue and gingivitis and periodontal disease. The reason why I like this test is because, number one, it tells you what's happening right at this moment. And this number precedes pocket depth and bone loss. It is also 18 months predictive of future bone loss. So this is like the earliest biomarker that we can detect that a patient's going to have an issue in the future. Now, if that biomarker is high, then we know that there is active collagen breakdown going on in the mouth. And, you know, of course, radiographs are reactive, right? So you have to have about 6 weeks of bone loss before you can start to see it on an x-ray at minimum. And so if that number is high, we know that the gum tissue is breaking down. And now we know that the gate is wide open between the mouth and the rest of the body. So I want to know what bacteria is present, because not all bacteria respond to the same treatments. But then I also want to know how much, if any, of that bacteria is getting into the body. And that's what I use the MMPA test for.
Now, that's very interesting to me, because we're kind of, you know, getting ahead of it before any noticeable damage is made. And one thing I remember too, in school, they said, like, for treating periodontal disease, it's actually very challenging because often there's no pain associated with it.
Yep.
So the patient often isn't motivated to treat it. But how are your patients receptive to it? Like, in their mouth, there's no sign of disease, and you're saying, well, hey, you're showing high signs of this. How do they receive that? Are they motivated to take care of it?
So I think that by using those objective tests, it's much easier to convince patients or motivate them to treat it, because now they have objective data. You know, high blood pressure, for example, and high blood sugar in the case of diabetes, those don't hurt either, right? But patients are very motivated to treat those conditions because there's an objective test saying you have this disease or you have this problem. If you don't treat this, you will get, you know, diabetic retinopathy or neuropathy or, you know, whatever, lose your eyesight. Or if you have high blood pressure, you could lose a heart or have a heart attack. And so what's really great about dentistry is we're starting to get these diagnostic tests that now can prove to patients, it's no longer my opinion versus the dentist down the road, or my opinion versus the hygienist, or my opinion versus the patient. It's the data shows from your saliva, this is what's going on. We need to treat this now before you end up having an end-stage event, or before this bacteria travels to your heart or your brain and causes issues. So I find that they become way more motivated when we have the tests. And then we can retest to see if the treatment's successful or if they need further treatment down the road, which is really nice. We're becoming way more objective in dentistry.
That's wonderful to hear. One thing I also think about is, like, you know, years ago when I was a patient, before I was even in the dental field, quite often they didn't really talk about your health history. They would just go into your teeth cleaning, ask about your brushing and flossing, and then you on your way with a toothbrush.
Yep.
So the culture, if you will, of dentistry is changing. But how do you find that the patients are kind of questioning it? Like, you're not my doctor. Why are you asking me all these questions? Or, you know, like, it seems like something you would go to your doctor for more than your hygienist or your dentist.
Yeah. And, you know, they definitely do, especially, you know, some older patients that have been in the, you know, going to see their dentist for, you know, 40, 50 years, when they start going to a new dentist or a different practice and they start asking these questions. Yeah. I mean, I definitely heard from people, especially about airway, you know, when I'm telling someone they need a sleep study, they're like, well, I'll talk to my doctor about this. I'm like, okay, yeah, the doctor's going to call me, but, you know, so yeah, you will get those questions. But again, I always try and start that conversation by saying, did you know that the health of your mouth affects the rest of your body? And then I try and educate them. And you can tell by someone's body language if they're buying into it or not. And if they're not buying into it, that's okay. And I don't push them. Oftentimes, people have to hear this information on average, I'm not getting 7 to 10 times before they start to really open up to it, especially the older patients. You know, the younger patients who come in will be all about it. They'll be on Dr. Google trying to look up everything that you say, you know, doing their own research. They'll freak themselves out. You know, every little sign of bleeding, they're going to come into your office and say they have an emergency. But it's the older people that you're just going to have to be patient with. And, you know, not every patient is going to want the level of care that you want to provide. And it's always going to be the patient's choice as to how committed they are to their oral health, you know, and at least they're coming in to see you. I mean, that's like great, right? That they're at least taking that step. And if they don't want to fully commit at this time to the oral systemic piece of it, that's okay too. You know, and if you can tell that they're not into it, I would just say, hey, I need to just quickly run through your medical history. I just want to make sure you're not on any medications that are contraindicated for anything that I'm doing. And we'll talk more about this next time. So try not to over push, over educate, especially if someone's not open to that information, but just start planting little seeds every time they come in. You want to make them want to come back. You know, the last thing you want to do is try and harp and lecture someone who doesn't want the information. And now all you've done is made them not want to come back to see you. And then you run the risk of them changing practices, maybe to a practice that doesn't even know anything about oral systemic health. And that breaks my heart that they would never have that option again. So go start slow and don't push.
In school, they mentioned when you see a patient, you basically only give them one thing. So whether that's talking to them about quitting a bad habit that's affecting their oral health, or giving them a new tool to use, like, you know, maybe an interdental device or something like that. Because again, we don't want to overwhelm them. We want them, you know, feeling good about taking care of their oral health and like taking control of it and not feeling, you know, like, oh, they're just trying to make money off of me or, you know, whatever the case may be.
I love your school. That is exactly right. You want to go slow. Don't overwhelm them. Make it tangible. People have very busy lives and very stressful lives. And the last thing we want to do is be a source of stress for them. So you're absolutely right there.
All right. So I kind of asked all the questions kind of related to dental hygiene, but you do have a few other areas that you kind of are well versed in. And I wanted to talk a little bit about those as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Cause you were mentioning about dental implants. I mean, that does touch on the hygiene side of it. So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Just how I got into implants or how I use them in the office or.
Yeah. Both of those. Yeah.
So I got into implants, obviously through my accident when I lost a bunch of teeth. I had my spinal restored with dental implants. And so I really got to see just what a benefit it was. And something that happened was in one area where I broke my jaw, when the jaw fracture healed, it left me with a very large bone defect. And back in the late 90s, they weren't really doing a whole lot of grafting back then. So that site was not able to support an implant. And so I got a bridge there. And then in my other areas where I lost a couple of teeth, I was able to get implants. So right away, I got to see the difference between having a dental implant and having a bridge. And I can tell you, a bridge is awful. I mean, it's so horrible to clean. You know, oftentimes you don't clean, even when you're a dental professional, you know, it's like, oh, I have to get out super floss again. And even when you pre-clean, it's never fully clean. And so as soon as, you know, I graduated dental school and bone grafting became very predictable, I took the bridge off, got a bone graft, got an implant, and then just replaced the two single crowns. And so that really solidified kind of my passion for dental implants and why they're so much better for patients. And so I, as a general dentist, place implants. I also do what's called overdentures, where dentures are anchored into the jaw by a couple implants. And then I also do full mouth fixed prosthesis based off of implants too. And then I currently lecture and teach for Nobel Biocare, who is a dental implant company. I just got back actually from a course in Arkansas this morning.
Oh, wow.
Teaching last night. And so I just really am passionate about educating general dentists on how to do basic bone grafting procedures and dental implant procedures, because when I grew up in a small town, we didn't have an oral surgeon or a dentist within 90 miles of our town that could do implants. And so my parents were very modest blue collar people, and they would have to take off work just so they could drive me 90 miles one way to get care. And that was a really big financial and time burden on my family. And so I made up my mission that, you know, once I became a dentist, I was going to educate as many general dentists as I could in basic surgery. That way all patients have access to quality care. So that's really why I focus on implants now.
That's wonderful. So my question, I guess, would be on that final appointment when that patient has their final work done, what is their reaction?
For an implant?
Yeah. Or well, for, I'm thinking, I guess, more for the, like the mouth reconstruction.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a couple different reactions that I get. One is, you know, someone who's had a really, diseased terminal dentition for a long time, you know, really broken down teeth, a lot of pain. There's a lot of shame and humiliation that comes along with their teeth and their smile as well. So they don't, you know, open their mouth very much when they talk, they don't smile. And then when you put those teeth in and they see their new smile, I mean, you know, tears just come down, right? Because they've just been so ashamed and had such low self-esteem for so long that to give them back that piece of themselves that they've lost decade. And this is a, usually this happens over decades, right? So they've been feeling it for decades. And now you put these brand new teeth in, I mean, they're just really overwhelmed. And then I get the other people who, you know, don't really, they're usually denture wearers, or maybe they have had partials for a long time or something like that. And they just want to eat, right? Like,
oh yeah,
they're fine with their smile. They don't really care. They're usually old, you know, older men. And then you put their teeth in, and the first thing they do is they start clapping them together, you know, biting at them, and they're like, these feel weird. And then I'm like, yeah, but go eat a steak now, you know? And then they get so excited because now they can actually eat the food that they want to eat versus eating what they only can eat. So yeah, those are the two reactions I typically get.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, that would be life-changing, especially when it comes to food. I mean, I love food, so.
Yeah, it's very rewarding. And a lot of us have never, you know, especially when we're young, and a lot of us get into this profession when we're young, we haven't experienced what it's like to be missing a front tooth or even a back tooth, or what it's like to not be able to smile in front of people or to chew your food completely and fully so you're not swallowing big pieces of food that then cause indigestion and heartburn. And it's a really big deal for these patients, and we serve a very big purpose.
When someone gets, you know, full mouth reconstruction, a lot of times, like, they don't have any teeth left, but how important is it that they go back to the dentist even though they have no teeth?
So it's even more important. And what studies are showing is that, you know, what is really awesome about teeth is that teeth are actually organs, which people don't understand, because they're living tissue. So we have the inert material on the outside, which is enamel, but then we have the living tissue, the dentin and the pulp on the inside, which that contains, you know, nerves and blood vessels. Those blood vessels, the pulp and the teeth, is what connects the teeth to the rest of the body. And when you take out the teeth, the blood supply, the nerve, the bone that supports it, all of that goes away. Well, that blood supply is really critical in maintaining the immune system of that tooth. So if, you know, a tooth starts to get a cavity, or they start to get some sort of gum infection or pathology, you know, the blood supply around the teeth will have the immune system go to that area and start to kill off the invaders. Well, when you do a root canal on a tooth, or when you take out a tooth and put an implant in, you no longer have that blood supply and immune defense system, because the implant is obviously inert, or in a root canal sense, the tooth is dead. And so those root canal teeth or implants have no way of fighting off infection or periodontal pathogens. And so what happens is root canal teeth often get recurrent decay. They often get recurrent abscesses. Implants obviously will get peri-implantitis. And so what we know is that implants get peri-implantitis much, much faster than teeth get periodontitis. We also know that implants respond very minimally to peri-implantitis treatment versus teeth. And this is because there is no blood supply. There's no way for it to heal. So it's crucial that those patients come back in for cleanings. You know, and there's also this whole concept of the patient lost their teeth for a reason, right? It's not like a healthy person came in and all of a sudden lost all their teeth. Their teeth were diseased, decaying, diseased, periodontal disease for decades. And so just by taking all the teeth out, sure, it gets rid of some of that bacteria, but not all of it. And a lot of times these patients who have lost all their teeth, part of the reason they lost it is because of poor nutrition. And oftentimes that won't change even. In fact, it almost gets worse when you give them teeth back. And also because of poor hygiene habits, which again, oftentimes doesn't change just when you put on full new reconstruction. They may get motivated for a couple months, but they do slip back quite frequently. And so I tell those patients at first, they come in every 3 months for me to clean the implants, clean the underside of the prosthetic. But when I take that first one off, if their tissue is red and inflamed, you know, it's pretty dirty under there, I have them come back every 8 weeks. Just because I know it's going to be much harder for me to chase after and treat peri-implantitis than it would be if I prevented it. So yeah, they absolutely must come back.
Yeah. And I think just because it's not as common to know someone with full denture or implants, people don't really think about going back to the dentist because they're like, problem solved, but not really.
No, it's so much more important. And the process of the bacteria from the mouth getting into the bloodstream still occurs because you still have an implant piercing through the tissue. So you still have an opening. So if that tissue gets diseased and starts to break down, bacteria in the mouth are still getting into the rest of the body. So you still have that oral systemic connection even with implants.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, this has all been really good, like a lot of information. And I'm sure my listeners are just going to love it because definitely related to what we're learning all about, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that. And like I said, I really hope the next generation of hygienists are going to be the pioneers in oral systemic health. That's my goal.
Yes, and I definitely agree with that. So where can people find you online?
So a couple places. First is I have a website. So it's katieleedds.com. On there, I have, you know, blogs, I have interviews, other podcasts that I've done. But then I also have, I do some coaching on how to incorporate oral systemic health into people's practices. And then I also do virtual microbiome testing for patients if they can't get it from their current dentist. People can also follow me on social media. On Instagram, all my handles are essentially just Katie Lee DDS.
Okay, that makes it easy.
Yeah, but I talk on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, all those places. Most of my posting is on oral systemic health and microbiome. And then don't forget to check out the book, Saved by the Mouth. It's such an easy read. It's a very cheeky writing style, so it's entertaining. But it's a really good overview of oral systemic health and how the mouth affects almost every system in the body.
Yeah, and I was kind of having a peek at that, and you were giving some real life stories, which were just very interesting to me. So I think that kind of helps bring it into the real world.
Yeah, every chapter talks about a different organ system. And I start off every chapter with talking about a patient that had a, you know, poor oral health in one area or another and how it was affecting their condition. And so I feel like that's really relevant because especially when you're going over medical histories with patients, right, you can see how easily what you guys do ties into their medical history.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And it's been a pleasure. So
you're welcome.
Thank you for being here. Yeah.
Thanks for having me. Good luck in school.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I appreciate your support on this journey, and until next time, I am Dax Scott.